This week's The Chat with Claire Fordham is brought to you by the Messenger Mountain News,
the newspaper for and about the Santa Monica Mountains.
Hello, this is The Chat with Claire Fordham. I'm Claire Fordham.
And I'm Tiago, the producer and engineer.
You're much more than that, much more important than that. Today's episode of The Chat with Claire Fordham, I am chatting with one of the most extraordinary people I've ever met. Now, people who interview, they always say, oh, this is one of the most amazing people I've ever met. She's just marvellous and a very, very close friend. She's a bit of a friend. I'd like to get to know her even better. And trust me, this woman is truly, truly extraordinary. She is a creative visionary. Her name is Kathy Eldon, and she set up this company, a non-profit called Creative Visions, which is to help young people use social media and documentary film, loads of different ways to get a positive message around the world by promoting worthy causes. You're going to think that this is going to be a sad one, but it's not. It's truly, truly inspiring. Basically, every mother's worst nightmare happened when Kathy Eldon's son, he was age 21 or 22, and he was the youngest ever photojournalist for Reuters news agency, and he was murdered in Mogadishu by an angry mob. You'll hear all about it, and then you will just be blown away by this woman's resilience, how she's making the world a better place, how she has turned every parent's worst nightmare into something truly extraordinary. So put the kettle on. I think you'll need a cup of tea with this one, maybe even a coffee, maybe a cocktail if you're listening at that time of day. But please sit back, put your feet up, and listen to the extraordinary Kathy Eldon.
Should I put the kettle on?
I think it's best if you do. I need tea.
We simply must applaud them, the Chat Podcast with Claire Fordham. Keep calm and chat on.
I'm so happy to see you.
Absolutely.
And I'm looking forward to chatting with you again.
Thank you. Lots of good stuff happening.
One of my favourite people.
Oh, gosh, and thank
that's
you.
True.
That's, so
that's
nice.
No,
thank
not,
you,
not bullshit.
Thank
I don't
you,
do that.
No, you wouldn't know.
But so many people, before I actually met you, said to me, have you met Kathy? No, I haven't. And it, literally in a week, five or six people.
Oh my gosh.
And then you're just at the bottom of the road because I'm in Topanga.
Yeah, no, quite.
And
that's good.
Apart from the fact you are extraordinary.
Oh God.
You do have an extraordinary story to share, which you...
Thank you.
It is something that defines you. Perhaps the thing that identifies you, if you like, is the how you are keeping the spirit and the legacy of your wonderful son, Dan, alive.
Dan was always a noisy spirit. He was funny and handsome and flawed, as we all are. He was not perfect, but he cared a lot about other people. He was brought up in Kenya, Nairobi, Kenya. I was a journalist. I was one of the few women on the biggest English language newspaper and one of two white women working for the newspaper. I was a freelance. I got to interview these incredibly active, creative people who were nation building. It was back in 1980. And I had come from Iowa and was a suburban housewife in London. And I was blown away by the attitudes of these feisty people. It's sort of like Topanga, actually. It sort of reminds me of Topanga. They didn't ask permission. They didn't get licenses. You know, they just built houses
very
where they shouldn't
like,
have.
Just like Topanga.
It flung up a structure that was totally illegal, but, you know, people lived in it. And I was so inspired by them. And so Dan would trail along behind with his camera and take pictures for me for the newspaper. And he was inspired by them, too. So when he heard about a young girl who needed a heart operation, a scholarship kid at his international school, he created Operation Save a Heart and got everybody around him to raise money. And, you know, the legal ways, I have no idea, but they raised enough money for this lovely young girl to have a heart operation. A couple of years later, when he was about 14 or 15 or 16, he discovered a beautiful family of Maasai, people who needed, you know, money for the school fees. So Dan, again, raised money by selling jewelry that the mother had made beautiful beaded jewelry. And everybody in the school ended up wearing this wretched, you know, lovely beaded jewelry. But, you know, he managed to tell the story.
It doesn't sound flawed to me.
Oh, gosh, messy, very messy. No, but then when he was 18, he drove down to Malawi, as people did in those days. And another Kenyan friend of ours had driven to South Africa at the age of 14. So I didn't think it was particularly odd. So when he came back, he had discovered a refugee camp there where the women were carrying water on their heads for miles. 14,000 people and no wells. So he decided they needed wells. So he, again, gathered his team together of unlikely, motley crowd of kids from all over the world. And they all raised money. And they went on a 7-week trip across Africa to deliver this aid to a refugee camp. One of the kids on the safari was a boy named Christopher Nolan.
Oh, the Christopher
Nolan. That Christopher Nolan. So Christopher Nolan, is, you know, his life was changed by that safari. He filmed it together with Rocco Bellich, who then was Oscar nominated for Genghis Blues and Happy. Amy, my daughter, was on the safari only 15 years old, turned 16 on the safari. Jeff Gettleman, this kid from Chicago who painted houses to raise the money, Jeff is now the bureau chief for the New York Times in India, East Asia. So every young person on that trip was deeply moved and transformed by the trip. They all went back to college. Dan sort of bounced in and out of colleges. He was dyslexic, so he knew that he would never be able to do the math requirement. So he would pop in, learn what he needed to learn, and then go off and have life experience. And then he'd go back into a college again and do it all over again. At the age of 21, he discovered that there was a terrible famine. He heard about a terrible famine in Somalia. Together with his friend Aidan Hartley, they went in. Aidan was working with Reuters to tell the story. His photographs literally triggered a global response, Operation Restore Hope.
He was 21. It's extraordinary.
Well, he was so excited by this and so turned on by it that he decided to go back to Somalia as a Reuters stringer, the youngest Reuters correspondent. And he charted or documented a country that was spiraling into civil war. A year later, he was on his final mission there. And actually, I said, Dan, don't you think it's time that you left? He said, Mom, don't ask me to leave. The job is not over. The story's not over. Please don't ask me to leave. And I had a long pause because I remembered when I was leaving my husband and he really didn't want me to go.
This is the kid's father.
Yeah,
Mike.
And I just knew that I had to do that to be true to myself, that he was supportive. He didn't want me to, but he was supportive. And so I said, Dan, okay, I'm so proud of you. You know, you're living the life of your choice, and I'm really proud of you, and I love you so much. And we agreed we were going to meet in 2 weeks. Well, tragically, that didn't happen because on the day that he was supposed to leave, there was a terrible bombing by UN forces of a house where they believed that the bad warlord was hiding. And the warlord wasn't there. It's like our quest for Osama bin Laden.
Yeah.
The guy wasn't there. And unfortunately, the collateral damage took out 80 people killed and another couple hundred people wounded. Women, children, young people. So the survivors raced to the hotel where the journalists were staying and said, please, you know, come. Dan was there. And after getting assurance that they would be guarded and protected, he and a little coterie of journalists went out, but tragically the people, when they arrived, were so enraged by what had happened that they struck out and beat stoned 4 journalists to death.
Including your son.
Including Dan. So within minutes after he was killed, I was working on a feature film on ivory poaching at the time, and I know the power of storytelling. I know that, you know, when you tell stories that you do all the time, Claire, that people get excited about, they will respond. Mm. So I decided that, honestly, within an hour, that I wanted to move to Hollywood and make a film about Dan and his friends that would inspire people to believe they had a role to play in changing the world around them. I didn't exactly know what that meant. I didn't know anybody in Hollywood, but I moved.
And you made it happen.
Long story.
I know, but it was award-winning. It's a long story.
No, it's a beautiful film. I'm proud, but it was 24 years later.
But also this is not unusual about journalists being killed covering stories. This became a passion of yours as well to promote to tell the world how many journalists do die.
That year there were 56.
Wow.
And it was early on. Journalists weren't targeted exactly at that time. They were just starting to be targeted. Because in the old days, journalists were behind the lines and they weren't targets. Now they're harassed, they're kidnapped, they're captured, they're beheaded. Mm-hmm. You know, James Foley, they are really targeted.
Daniel Pearl. So many.
Yeah, so many.
Now, one of the many things that fascinate me about you is the fact that you were able to forgive Dan's murderers. That it didn't come easily. Can you talk a little bit about that and how that helped you?
I appreciate that question. Right after Dan was killed, I was so angry. Mm. I was staying in a hotel in Santa Monica working on a film, and I was so enraged that I remember tearing at the curtains because I just didn't know what to do with myself. I was so angry. And I knew early on, I knew why the Somalis had done it. I understood. Mm.
You haven't shied away from blaming the Americans.
Absolutely. No. 100%. It was tragically, it's something that's been repeated over and over and over again, where the collateral damage of going after the big guy ultimately radicalizes those who are left behind. So I got it, but I was still very angry. And we went back, Amy and I did a film on a documentary called Dying to Tell the Story, and we ended up in Somalia in 1996, retracing Dan's steps. And I remember we were just in the house where he was killed, and the filmmaker, Alan Palmer, said, hurry, run, we've got to get out of here, you know, that hurry, where our lives are in danger. And we ran to our vehicle, the van, and people were pounding on it, the women were pounding on it, saying, go away, you're reminding us of something terrible, just leave. So again, I was like, whoa, you know, I'm really not sure I like these Somali people, and I was very, very cross. And we flew back to America, and then we edited the film, and we were invited to do the premiere at the United Nations. How incredible is that? And I remember we were in the hotel, and we all dressed up, ready to go to the UN, and I got in the car with Amy, my daughter Amy, then 22 years old, and as we slipped into the back seat, we looked at each other. The cab driver, was Somali. Mm. And it was, whoa, what are we going to do? And so I decided, okay, I'm just going to tell this story. And so it was like, okay, here's what happened to my son, you know. And when we got to the United Nations, and I remember the flags fluttering around me, and the guy turned around, and there were tears in his eyes. And he said, my name is whatever. And he said, I know the story. I know everything about the story. And it was absolutely wrong. And he said, on behalf of all Somalis, I ask your forgiveness. Whoa, you know, what do you do? And I remember thinking, wow, that Gandhi said, we have to be the change. And if I didn't change, how was I going to expect the world to change? So I said, okay, I said, thank you. I said, I understand why they did what they did, and I forgive.
And you meant it?
I meant it.
And did you feel a weight lift?
Completely. It was like a skylight opened in my soul, and a tremendous weight that I've been carrying around, because anger and revenge and retribution and hatred and it's actually very heavy.
Yes.
It weighs you down.
Yeah.
And I felt lighter. I felt, it was so beautiful, because we went back to South Africa to shoot the film. We had 400 Somalis, and I actually felt closer to those Somalis than with anybody. And so many of them, even there in South Africa, had suffered and lost people in that incident. And so we were joined. We were completely joined by the tragedy of a mistaken
point of view. Is it painful to you to watch the news? It is me.
At the moment,
here we are again.
I read two hard copies every day, the New York Times and the LA Times. And every day I think, why on earth am I doing this? Just what's happening in Syria. And nobody's writing. I'm talking about it. If you don't read the New York
Times.
Nobody
cares. That's what it feels like. I mean, the people don't care, and the government seem to know it. Now, here we are in your extraordinary offices here in Creative Visions, which is, you have set this up to keep Dan's legacy alive, which is about creative activism. And you help many people, not necessarily young people, but mostly young people.
All varieties. I'd say that, honest to goodness, you know, people, our Rock Your World, which is our educational program, is young people, but our creative activist program, honestly, you can join any time. And then our network is, good Lord, just go on to Creative Visions and type
creativevisions.org.
That's right, and join the network.
Can you give some examples of a few projects of which you're particularly proud?
So we started in 1998, Creative Visions, to support creative activists like Dan, who are using media and the arts for social impact. And we've had the really tremendous joy of wrapping our arms around probably 260 officially projects and productions. And I mean, probably thousands of people have, you know, passed through, been helped by our team and our rippling effect around the world. But it's never been about Dan as much as it is about sparking that. We all have a creative spark inside us. And it's how do we use that spark for good?
And we can make a difference. The power of one. Extraordinary differences.
We all have that capability, and we do not have to fly to Somalia. We do not have to go to, you know, Ferguson. We can do it in Topanga. You know, there's so much that needs to be done. So we blow on that spark and say, you know what? There's more. There's more purpose. There's more meaning. There's more. There are ways to be fulfilled. I believe in America right now, there's this yawning chasm, this gaping hole, this emptiness.
Do you think there's hope for humanity, or do you think we're
absolutely
doomed? Okay? You see more good than
I 100%. I think that there is a shift happening, and it right now I think we're at the crisis of it's been predicted forever that there would be a time when the earth would be in crisis, and I feel that the current administration is exacerbating this to such an extent that people are rising up and saying, hey, not on my watch, you know?
Yeah.
And I think it could get worse. I've always felt, we did a project called Global Tribe years ago, that we're all members of this global tribe, and that we don't know it because we think we're members of little bitty tribes, and we factionalize and we come apart. But ultimately, we're a global tribe, and we're children of the planet. And is it going to be a meteor? Is it going to be aliens? Is it going to be, you know, cataclysmic climate change? Something. Why should it have to be so cataclysmic to bring us together? And now with our film that we finally made, which is beautiful, called The Journey is a Destination, we are kicking off that movement that I talked about. And its essence is connection is a solution. And how are we going to come together, really? And what are we going to take on?
And this is a dramatization of what happened.
This is a feature film.
Yeah.
I am played by a very beautiful woman named Maria Bello, which is really fun. And then Dan was played by Ben Schnetzer. The film was directed by Bronwyn Hughes.
And it was premiered at Toronto.
Yeah, we won a load of awards. Every place we went, we got an award.
Can people see it? Is it
available? It's on iTunes, Amazon. And yeah, we're in alignment with what President Obama is doing. So we're hoping that we can really work together with the Obama Foundation on this youth movement.
Okay.
I'm very excited.
And you found time to write a book, which I loved, by the way. Again, I know this is so embarrassing. You're going to think, I bet you say that to everyone. I don't. I love autobiography. I like reading up people's stories. It's a wonderfully written book, gripping read. There's highs and lows. Obviously, the story of Dan's murder, I'm going to say it, because that's what it was.
Oh, the murder.
It's painful, but it's extraordinary, especially how you dealt with it with such grace and what came out of it.
Keep calm and chat on.
But there was one, because I'm a romantic fool, so there you were. You were divorced. You'd had a failed relationship a long time, but disappointed in love. And then you met somebody and... can you tell the story of the proposal?
Well, first of all, I want to tell you that I was single for about 18 years.
Oh.
And yes, there were many failed relationships.
I didn't like to say many.
No,
I was
one or two. No, actually, you know what? I would see somebody, but there was nobody, honestly, that was more than just like a flirt. So that was a long haul. And Amy and I, my daughter and I, had done a number of guided journals. The first one was Angel Catcher, which was really helping people go through grief. Second one is called Soul Catcher, and it's finding your purpose in life. And I just loved working on those with Amy, published by Chronicle Books. And then we looked at each other, and we'd done all these films, and we'd done books, but we didn't have the right love in our life. So we did Love Catcher.
Oh, wow, okay.
And it's a guided journal to bring more love into your life. It's a really sweet book that you can buy for almost nothing on, you know, Amazon now. But we both knew who we wanted. We defined it very clearly. And I materialized this extraordinary man who lived on the beach in Malibu with a second house that he was renting to John Turteltaub, who was at that time directing National Treasure. He's a big, fancy director. Well, I thought John might be really good for Amy. So we somehow got them introduced. And they fell madly in love and got married. And then Michael and I got married. So we live side by side on the beach.
So you're next door neighbors.
Yeah, we're next door neighbors.
Amy could see. You went for a walk out the window.
Oh my gosh, the proposal was so sweet.
And you didn't see it coming. You didn't.
Oh, it was kind of like there was an ultimatum.
So oh, I see.
I think at some point, but yeah. I didn't. No, not that day. No. But it was like, guys, you know what? I'm getting on. Let's figure this one out.
Can I ask how old you were when he proposed?
It must have been like
40, 50.
No, 50. Yeah. 57, something like
oh,
that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, something okay, like that. Yeah, exactly.
We want to give those
people hope. No, definitely. I think it was 57, something like that. Oh, no.
Yeah, my husband proposed on my 50th birthday.
Yeah, it's
been
amazing. This is very important to give people hope.
Yeah.
So we went for a little walk to the palm tree on Topanga Beach. And then he pulled out this beautiful blue little square box, you know. And then he proposed. It was absolutely lovely. And then we walked back, and Amy and John were standing with a bottle of champagne open, ready to open. And they had sort of suspected, for whatever reason, because I know, because normally Amy would come for a walk with us, and Michael said, nope, going with it this way. No, thank you very much. And they'd seen the sparkle, because it was a really beautiful ring.
Oh, how wonderful.
So John had snapped us from afar.
And you live, you've got grandchildren now.
We're side by side.
You live side by side with your daughter.
She's my favorite person.
I know, it's wonderful.
She's
and you feel
wonderful.
Fulfilled. And any message to a grieving mother?
Oh, my goodness. You know, it's I live to help grieving people. And right now we're dealing, oh, my goodness, so many people are dealing with suicides.
Yes.
I just heard of two again yesterday. And people who are very young who are dying. And I'm trying to gather together. I call it the Noisy Spirits Club, because people have to do the grieving, and there are wonderful organizations for grieving. But I really like to help people create meaning out of lives that have been stuffed.
You actually actively are involved in helping grieving parents?
Oh, yes. I mean, it's not something I sought to do, and I did it for years through Angel Catcher. But what's happened is that there's so many people, two yesterday, who came in. It just breaks my heart. And there's something that is so, as I say, this gaping hole, and it's how are we going to fill the empty is what I'm saying. And how are we going to help people if they are lost to us physically, and I believe that energy remains, then how can we create meaning? And how can I love to be able to help be a support system? Because I was left with a lot of material. Dan was, you know, he left behind 20 journals. He'd lived a packed life. Most young people just haven't had that extreme variety in their lives. So how do we face the loss of someone we love, old, young, middle, it doesn't matter, but that hole in our heart, that hole in our lives, how can we fill it with something that makes you smile, that will give you joy? And I know that that's possible. You know, I was so sad, I thought I would die. You know, you can die of grief.
Right.
But I knew that Dan would kill me if I did that. So I was like, no, I can't do that. I have to. These lives cannot be in vain.
Are you a religious person?
I'm a spiritually tuned in person. I was brought up a Methodist. I love the ritual and the hymns, but I don't believe you can confine, for me, anything in a box. And I think that, unfortunately, sometimes people get pretty dogmatic in their religious beliefs. Mm-hmm. I loved Agape, which is a wonderful spiritual community, very mixed. I love it because it's black, white, beige. Everybody is different, and that means a lot to me. But I believe there's more, but I don't believe that you necessarily have to convert somebody else to your belief, or that you have the only answer. And that's just me.
Right. And that brings you comfort.
Yes, it does. It does.
And I think if I lost a child, I mean, losing a child is the worst, accepting that. But then that to be compounded, that would be if your child had been murdered and died in fear.
Yes.
He must have.
Because he would have known some of the people. You know,
oh, really?
It was a mob, and they were angry. And that's in our film. We bring alive, we show why the Somalis did what they did. Mm. It's about radicalization, and it's happening every day of the week. It's all over the world, and we see the effects of it. So we cannot turn people into cockroaches, as they did in Rwanda. You know, we have to embrace one another and give opportunities
and forgive.
And forgive.
And also, can we talk finally about the importance of creativity? Because Dan was extremely creative, but his drawings, his writings, which are also books, all available from either danelden.com or is he an org as well, and creativevisions.org. But creativity is a wonderful way to express yourself, I think. But not everyone is creative.
Everybody's creative. Oh, okay. Everybody has that creative spark, 100%. And it may have been when you're in seventh grade and people said you couldn't draw. I mean, that's not creativity. It's not about drawing. You know, we're all creative. We're all, every day of our lives, we're creating solutions. Dan said he didn't want to go to college that first year. And I said, oh, you want to take a year off? He said, no, I want to have a year on. Mm-hmm. And it was to take life on a day, a week, an hour. How can I live more in a more present way, a more creative way, a more energetic way, a more loving way? Just being connected to who I am and who I always thought I could be. Right. And of course, we lose track of that sometimes.
Yeah. Now, do you have any intention of retiring? I know how hard you work, but last time I came to your home, which is not far from, it's next door to the Creative Visions offices. I swear, I mean, you were doing interviews with massive publications. You were on the phone. You had people. You were making lunch for people, all seamlessly. And you were doing that. You had your assistant coming in, and you had all this, and people coming in to talk. Then you had people turn up uninvited, all of whom were welcomed, would come and sit. Any plans to retire?
No, but I'm just laughing because today I have, you know, I don't know how many people coming to lunch, and I've got some old chalada. You know, it's like, I hope they like old chalada because that's what we're having. But thank you. I've got some old wine too. I'll just, maybe that will help. I love what I do. And it's, I think, to have the privilege of working with young people, with creative people who, you know, have a creative vision and they want to achieve it, to get to talk to you, Claire. I just love it. The journalist in me. It makes me happy to every day wake up and know that you can make a difference. And I get so much validation. You know, I'm really lucky. So for me to want to retire, my father was 92 when he played his last international tennis game. You know, he was competing. They both died at 97, 98.
Good genes, then.
I have really good genes. But the idea of not doing this, what would I do? You know, that just seems like a real drag.
No. And how do you and Michael relax? So do you get time to relax? Because
he's very frustrated. Yeah, I mean, he would like very much if I didn't have quite so many people flowing through the house that I was feeding at all hours of the day and night. That is a problem. And I think husbands and wives should have separate accommodations so that I can have everybody flow through and then I'll go and visit him. That's a problem. I haven't sorted that one out.
I'm sure you'll sort it out. Now, your assistant said, or colleague, whatever you want to call it.
I'm having so much fun.
She said I was allowed to have you for 30 minutes.
No, let's go on.
And I'm 28, 26.
Keep going.
I'm happy. Okay, cool.
This is fun.
Thank you. I'm so inspired by you and people like you. I think we've actually covered everything.
Oh,
you talked, just be creative, be busy. I do think it's important if one is, say, depressed or grieving or anything, is to keep busy. That isn't to say you turn away from embracing the grief.
Yeah.
But, and, you know, you talked about suicide, and I don't want to be controversial here or to hurt anyone who's either contemplating suicide or has lost a loved one to suicide. But, you know, if you're feeling depressed, be busy, be of service. Mm-hmm. Obviously, take the medication, because I think that does help. Not that I've been in that position, but friends who've suffered from great depression, the medication can pattern interrupt for a bit. And then be busy, be of service to someone less fortunate than yourself. And there always is someone less fortunate.
And that's the time that's the hardest to connect. You know, this connection is the solution, which is the theme of our campaign. When you're depressed, you don't feel like connecting.
Okay.
You know, and that's a real, really hard thing. And I remember when I'd left everything in my life and I moved to London, and I just remember sitting in front of a wall and trying to chant and trying to just survive. And I had a friend, Barney Wan, would call me every day and just make sure I hadn't jumped, you know. I mean, it was really
bad. You thought about it?
Oh, absolutely. Because there's no point in life. You know, why should I carry on? And certainly after Dan was killed, you think, oh, stuff it. But I had a child. You know,
yes.
I had a child. So that was never an option. But I understand the despair, and I understand that when we are despairing, all you want to do is crawl back into bed, you know, and pull that blanket over your head. So we can, for sure, and we know the solution is connection and finding purpose and meaning, but boy, is it hard when you're, when you don't want to connect, or you feel worthless and unworthy, or whatever, shame, or all the things that we can feel, or just that heavy darkness that can surround.
Thank you. That makes perfect sense. And I think only someone who's been there can fully get it.
Yeah.
Can we talk a little bit about money?
Yeah, money.
Because this is a massive organization that you have here.
It's starved.
You have some full-time staff that you are paying, which is vital. Many volunteers, but you have a team here. How are you funded, if you don't mind me asking?
No, it's a beautiful question. We always operate on fumes, and I'm tired of that. I don't think there's an organization that I know of that is creating more impact, because we're using media and arts. So that for every project that we're supporting, that project could be touching tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, even millions of people. So helping support us support others is a really good use of money. Our Rock Your World, 700,000 kids have used this program. We are just getting a full-time director. We've been operating with volunteers and really part-time people. So that, again, the impact made on with people who are just giving of their time and energy is extraordinary. We need now to pull in, and I really am looking for local support, people who want to be patrons, so that whatever funds we raise beyond that is purely for the projects. So we're looking, we have a number of people in at $25,000 or $50,000, a few, that we really want to have our substance paid for. We have a beautiful space where it's people could say, well, you're a charity, why have this beautiful space? We're renting part of it as well. But because we're in this space, we're able to serve in a way that is truly extraordinary. You know, as you say, the people flowing through.
Yes. Yeah. The view, I mean, you're on Topanga State Beach. And you host these during the summer, Sundowners, which is just spectacular with the views.
We have to do another one.
Yes.
Coming up.
Yes. But it's a most worthy cause. And also, not that I'm one of these people who has any disposable income, but, you know, if someone is, shall we say, wealthy or earns a significant amount of money, it is tax deductible.
Oh, of course.
And so it's not like you're giving, it's either give it to the tax man buy bombs with.
Yes, thank you.
And or give it to a cause that is absolutely doing good.
Yeah, both locally and globally.
Yes, you know, enormous global impact. Yeah, so I couldn't recommend you highly enough.
I appreciate that.
And it's extraordinary what you're doing, and don't stop.
I won't.
Thank you.
Come back often.
Just hug it out.
Hug it out.
Thank you so much. I'd invite myself to lunch, but you've already got too many people coming.
Stick around.
No, lunch. I've got jobs. But thank you. Thank you.
It's love being with you.
Oh.
You must come more often.
Okay.
Come
and what are you doing Thursday?
Yeah, seriously. No, I mean it. But yeah, for sure.
We simply must applaud them. The Chat Podcast with Claire Fordham. Keep calm and chat on.
I told you she was good. She was, wasn't she?
She was unbelievable.
Yeah.
I don't think I could forgive someone with such grace if something like that happened to a loved one.
An unbelievable woman, truly extraordinary. If anyone is feeling low or sad, I hope that's inspired you to know that you will get through it.
Keep calm and chat on.
Next week, I'll be chatting with musical warrior Tony Selvage. He is a brilliant, truly brilliant violin stroke viola player. And we have live music. We've got everything next week. We've got an interesting guy. Yes, he smokes a little bit too much weed. He's eccentric. Yes, he is. But it's funny. It's fun. It's a musical romp.
And he's played with all the musical greats.
Oh, yeah. Brian Wilson. I've forgotten who else. Other people. He's good. He's good value. He's very entertaining.
He's out there.
He's definitely out there, as indeed will our podcast be. The Chat with Claire Fordham, available on iTunes and my website, clairefordham.com. We've also got a Facebook page, The Chat with Claire Fordham. And the other thing I want to say is that if you want more information about Kathy Eldon, there are two websites, kathyeldon.com and creativevisions.org.
And you can also go to our website at clairefordham.com or our Facebook at The Chat with Claire Fordham to get all the information on past episodes, our guests.
See what they look like.
Yeah, and the links to all of our guests' websites.
Yeah, okay. I think we've done very well. Thanks so much for listening, everyone. We look forward to reconnecting and chatting with you next week.
And as always,
keep calm and chat on.
We simply must applaud them, the Chat Podcast with Claire Fordham. Keep calm and chat on.
The Chat with Claire Fordham is an M Squared production.